Welcome to On a Tangent, the podcast where the main characters are the stories behind the mathematics. My name is Simone, and in each episode, I am joined by a different early career mathematician from Münster to learn about their paths towards mathematics and their hopes for the future. In this episode, coming out during Pride Month, I'm joined by Asul, a doctoral researcher in set theory. We learn about how the axiom of choice transforms the universes it holds in, how logic is the mathematics of mathematics, and what's the quickest path to ice cream. I hope you enjoy this episode. So hi Asul, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. So, as you know, in the podcast, we sort of explore the stories of our guests. And so I would like to start from your past. So what is your earliest memory of mathematics?
Actually, I love that question. So when you told me you were going to do this podcast, I asked you what type of questions you would ask. And you told me this example. And I was so glad because I have this story and nobody ever asked me this, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know this until you asked me then. So I'm super happy to tell this. So the thing is, when I was a kid, in my hometown, the map of the city is a grid. And there is this main square in the city center that is a square. So it's 100 meters times 100 meters. But it also has a cross in the middle. And one of the things we did with my mom a lot was walking from my house to the city center and going to have an ice cream in the corner of the square. And to do that, the best way was to cross the square through the diagonal, right? And most of the blocks in my city don't have this, right? It's just that part that you can cross diagonally. And when I was a kid, I was always thinking, so first, if it was really better, I think that one I could see, I could just look around and see that it was shorter than doing two blocks of 200 meters. But I always wanted to know how much better it was. Because it seemed to me that it was more than one block, but less than two.
Mm-hmm. So better than two, but...
Yeah, but still... not so much better. So yeah. So how much? And I was obsessed with this and I was trying to estimate... But it was super hard because I was saying...
Getting faster to the ice cream,
among other things. Of course. How much faster are we getting to the ice cream?
Exactly.
Right? But I was always trying to do this. And in my mind, the estimation was 1.5. I didn't even know decimals, I think, at this point. But
one
somehow
and
half.
Half,
yes.
Yeah.
But I never could answer if the diagonal was less or more than 1.5. And this was just something I had in my mind for a long time.
Until... many years later in school, you suddenly found out.
Yeah, definitely. It was much longer and I was not even living there anymore. So it came the answer 10 years later, I don't know.
And do you somehow think this way, this is in a way a very geometric problem, then mm-hmm. sort of connects to what you do nowadays in your research? Or have you always been a very visual thinker or a geometric thinker?
I would say, so when I was in the Math Olympiads in high school, my favorite branch of problems was geometry, so Euclidean geometry. So in that regard, yes. But I would say I'm terrible at visual thinking in the sense of it's very hard for me to imagine figures.
Okay.
So in that sense, I would say no, but because I cannot imagine so much, then I would draw things.
Right, so you,
And then I like to compensate this lack of imagination with doing diagrams and drawings to help myself.
And so, I just sort of already went into this topic, but so what is it that you do nowadays in research?
So I'm studying set theory, that's the branch. It's inside logic, as you know,
of course. We finally have a logician on the podcast.
Yes. I mean, it's easier to tell you, right?
Of course, of course. But for our audience.
Yes, of course. So I study problems that are related with the axiom of choice and the subsets of the real numbers. So somehow the objects are very much normal math, let's say. And there are some geometrical objects that I study, but from the perspective of set theory, because the questions are related to how much axiom of choice do you need to construct these objects or not. which is essentially set theory.
A set theoretic question, yes.
Yes.
And is this how you explain it to non-maths friends?
If they ever ask. Definitely not. I mean, they don't know what the axiom of choice is, right?
Of course, yes. And why set theory is important for people, I mean.
I don't even know a mathematician. I'm not sure a mathematician knows why set theory is important in general, that's, I think.
Yes.
No.
Except for the fact that, I mean, this is the foundation. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Sure. No, to non-mathematicians, I usually say I do something in logic. Logic is a word that people know, right? Mm-hmm. Even, I mean, of course, they don't know what logic, mathematical logic means, but there is a concept of logic.
There's an idea, yeah.
And then if they ask me more, I say, okay, there is a branch of logic that is a theory that studies more or less the foundations of math and the structure of how math works. So there are these meta mathematical questions that the theory takes care of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
I usually tell people we do like what linguists do to the real world. Like people study the language in which people communicate and logicians study the linguistics of mathematics.
Yeah, it could be.
Also maybe. In terms of funding, probably. It's a similar parallel. But
in terms of funding?
We get as much funding as the linguistics people.
I see. Yes, I'm not sure. I don't have an idea of this.
Yeah, but I imagine they're not paid very well as all humanities people, yes.
Yeah, but I'm not... I agree on what you're saying, but in particular in set theory, I like more to simplify as the math of math.
Mm-hmm.
I think because to linguistics to study the language of real life, it's like a different thing, right? Linguistic is different from real world or the language that is spoken. The theory is itself a part of math, and I think that's one of the most beautiful things.
Yes, and the most confusing things.
And it's super confusing, but this thing, no, I mean, math can study things itself. That are things of math.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say this to people, even if they are non-mathematicians, it is like, what?
Shocking,
how do you
yes.
do that?
Yeah. And I do remember my first set theory classes, there is this all these sort of paradoxes of which seem to stem from the fact that you're actually talking about set theory when you do the set theory of mathematics. I mean, when you do the maths of maths, mm-hmm. you're in particular studying the maths of... I mean, you know... where?
Yeah, yeah, there is this self-reference that is super confusing at the beginning, yes.
And
I think it still is.
Yeah, I mean, either it's confusing or it's something to explore.
Well, it's definitely both for me. No?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's so weird, in a sense, in comparison to other branches that don't have this feature, makes mm-hmm. it more interesting.
And so your research deals with sort of... let's say, normal mathematical objects, which if another mathematician said this to me, it would be offensive, but we can say it, yeah? I mean, you know, because if somebody told me, oh, yeah, we do the normal mathematics, you do the logic, I would be a bit offended. But I can say, you know, the natural mathematical objects that we find in nature.
In nature?
Well, you know, in nature, like in mathematics.
Yeah, in mathematical nature.
In mathematical nature, mm-hmm. exactly. And you often hear about how the axiom of choice build these sort of paradoxical objects. Is this the kind of things you're interested in?
Yeah, so my PhD thesis is called Paradoxical Sets and the Axiom of Choice. So that's definitely the object. And I agree this about the normal math and not normal math.
But would paradoxical sets be considered a normal mathematical object?
I think so. I mean, for example, you have this example. I think this is one of the most well-known, I think. That is the Vitalis set, so the standard example of a non-measurable set in R, in the reals. And this is part of the course of real analysis.
Yes,
no?
Okay.
This is just something most of people would have seen at some point. Or Banachtarsky, that is so famous. No?
And yeah.
Some people don't like actually Banachtarsky, like they say, it's weird. Right? But for example, Vitalis set is really a part of understanding
theory.
Measure theory. No?
Mm-hmm. We don't work in the, what is it, the Solovay paradise where all sets are measurable. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, but of course, when you start asking a theoretical question, then the object kind of, mm-hmm. it doesn't satisfy the same role as if it is. Because you're not studying the object itself, but rather, so or in my case, which are the axioms you need to construct, or how consistent is this existence of this object with some other set of axioms or some other objects. So, yeah, even if the name, right, is the same, like Vitaly said, then what you're doing with it is very different.
You're not studying the properties of it, but rather what its existence says about the universe you find it in.
Yeah, maybe. Somehow where does it lie in the map of, mm-hmm. things? I don't know.
And I know you're not meant to play favorites, but what is your favorite paradoxical set among the ones?
What is my favorite paradoxical set? let's see. Well, I think if I have to pick one, it would be the one I thought more about.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this theorem in ZFC, so using the axiom of choice, that R3 can be partitioned, so the space can be partitioned in circles, so only the border, no? So, and these circles can be taken to have radius 1. So they are all the same, right? But still you can cover R3.
Which is, I think, the first time you hear it, you're like, of course I can do this, and then you mentally start placing circles one into the other, and then very quickly you get to the point where you don't know where to place the next one, right?
Because yeah, exactly, yes.
How do I not intersect?
And maybe, you can put more and more circles, right? Because each one is kind of small inside the space. But how would you end up completing everything of there?
Yes. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Imagine you put a lot of circles and, like, it's dense in R3.
But then there's some space that you have to fill
yeah,
in.
Yeah, if you have, like, some isolated points, for example, then, of course, you can undo it. Or even if you have, like, a full circle, but a few points are already taken, then you cannot put a circle again.
So this means you did it wrongly from the start, probably.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, there was something that you did that didn't allow to continue the procedure, right? But there is a way to do this process mm-hmm. wisely so that this doesn't happen. And this is a theorem of ZFC, so you really need the axiom of choice. Well, less than that, but some part of choice. I think this is my favorite. It's nice that you can tell people you're studying something like this.
Because they can visualize it and they can imagine.
They can visualize it. It's just Euclidean geometry, so I can even tell my family about this if they are patient enough to hear this.
Or to look at the pictures at least.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you feel like, because this feels a lot like one of those problems in number theory where the statement is very easy, but then the math behind it is very complicated. So I presume in a similar way, the problem can be stated very easily, but then proving it is not Euclidean geometry, it's actually...
Yeah, so the proof of this theorem is not... of course it has some Euclidean geometry, because the object is. But the main tool is doing transfinite induction on the cardinality of the reals, whatever that is. But the point is you do this induction, but it's longer than the natural numbers, but even more.
Mm-hmm.
You keep going after you... So you did countable many steps and then you keep going.
Yes.
And then you keep going and then you keep going until you reach the cardinality of the reals, which is the same cardinality of all the points in the space that you have to cover. This tool is not from Euclidean geometry, it's mm-hmm. theoretical. So the existence of this paradoxical set already has a proof that it's
theoretical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you said you need a less than choice, so maybe something like a well ordering of the reals or dependent choice, whatever this means for the non-logicians. But then maybe in the vein of what we said before, from the existence of this set, look at some universe where this set exists, can you then say anything about what axioms are true in this universe? For example, is some amount of choice still true?
Right, so that's exactly the questions we were trying to think of while my PhD was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the answer is no. you could have this set and basically no choice. I mean, this you can formalize this. For example, there is this concept of countable choice,
mm-hmm.
doing the choice countable many times. And we got the result that there is a model of set theory in which you have this set, so this partition of the space in unit circles, but still you don't even have countable choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I feel like, yes, for the non-logicians or maybe even for the non-set theorists, the striking idea is building a model of set theory because it kind of feels like building a universe of, but we are in one, so it's a bit confusing. No, I mean, of course, if you start thinking about this philosophically, you can go on for hours, I guess, but
yes.
How does one build a universe of set theory or a model of set theory?
I mean, I think that's the full thing of what set theory does, no? Building models of set theory that satisfy the things you want, no? So how do you build a model? Well, first you assume there is one.
Which is already, yeah.
And then from there, I mean, there are many techniques. So one way to build a model is build a smaller model.
Inside the one you have.
So from all the sets you have in your model, let's take only the definable sets, which have some definition. And then you'll get something, in principle, smaller. It could be strictly smaller. It could be all of it, depending on what you're doing. But there is also a way to construct bigger models.
Okay.
So there is this technique that is called forcing that allows you from a model and some other elements construct a bigger model than the one you started with. So those are the two ways people do it, basically.
I think I remember in my set theory class, it was described to me as sort of in the model, the people, there's people, and they believe in some sort of like entity.
Mm-hmm.
They know sort of how this entity looks like. They know some things, you know, like so in the forcing you have some properties encoded, but then you sort of look up at the sky and this entity doesn't exist. But then, like in the level above, the entity is there and looks down on the people and it sort of has an effect on them. So it's a bit like religion, which I don't notice. I mean, you have a lot of cardinals.
I think it a bit like that. So I don't know if you know this. Is it a book or? I think it's a book.
The higher set theory. No, infinity.
Nothing to do with this.
Ah, okay.
The flat something.
Flatlandia,
is it in English? Okay, yes.
Flatland, maybe.
Flatland. Flatlandia sounds much better.
Yes.
Flatland. Yeah, I didn't know it in English. Sorry. So in Flatland, there is this people that cannot. Well, actually, did I read this book?
I'm sure I read in school, like when I was very young.
Yeah, but so the point is, if you're in Flatland, you cannot see three-dimensional things, right?
You're a circle or
a square or something. But then a sphere in Flatland is like a circle that moves and has different radius, right? Because depending on the section of the sphere, the circle changes. So somehow from Flatland, you can see these three-dimensional things as another thing, which is not three-dimensional, right? Because you cannot. But you can guess what it is somehow. And you can imagine what three-dimensionality is by all the sections, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more or less what forcing is. Yeah, it's a simplification, of course, but what forcing is about. So from the original model, you can kind of imagine what the exterior model would be like.
And so from your research you're doing nowadays to let's maybe look into the future a bit, what is something you would like to see proven in the, say, next 10 years? By somebody, not necessarily you, but or some questions you would like to see answered?
I don't know. I think I would like, so I have this maybe vision about what I want to do in, I don't know, in the future, very abstractly, in general, at some point with math. Mm-hmm. And it is trying to connect set theory with like subset of the reals or things that are like normal math, no?
Yeah.
So
math
because,
if you find in nature.
Yes. Then I am not comfortable with it.
I think I often say, you know, model theories, there's logic on objects found in nature. This is what I usually say.
Wow. Yeah. I don't feel it is in nature, right? So I feel uncomfortable with that concept. But so in set theory, the real numbers, for example, are not the real line. So if you tell any mathematician, imagine the real numbers, they probably imagine the real line.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean, maybe they just say pi or something.
Yeah,
but
okay.
But the set of reals, no? Which is the set of reals, they will draw a line. And for the set theories, usually it is not. It's, for example, the power set of the natural numbers or all the functions from the natural numbers to the natural numbers or things like this. Like there are several sets that we consider them all as the real numbers. They are all in bijection with each other. So for most of the questions, this is the same. You know? If you care, for example, only about the cardinality of that set, are all the same. But for the objects I'm looking at, for example, circles in the space, you are thinking about the real line. I mean, the space is three times
the real line. Yeah.
The real line. So you have to look at the reals as the real line to just approach these questions. So what I would like to be solved is the things I'm curious about, of course, which is this abstract idea of some theoretical questions that are related to the reals as the reals of the mathematicians, which is the real line.
Mm-hmm. So to a more geometric version of the reals.
Yeah, but not only. I mean, even if you consider it, for example, the reals as a field, it's also something that is not, if the power set of the natural numbers.
It's not a field.
It's not a field.
It's a set, yeah.
Yes. So even if you ask more algebraic questions, this also has to do with this view that I have, that we have a gap there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the insights.
Thank you so much.
See you in the corridors.